Inside the Food Biz, I am your co-host, Ruben Torres, and today we are getting into this with Giovanni Cardullo, and he is from Gio Wine. And we did learn on our past episode, we did learn quite a few about the wine industry with our friend Jesse Navarez, and now we get into this with Giovanni, and he is just an awesome individual, kind of like an international man of mystery. He's been all over the place doing all kinds of cool stuff. He's kind of like the most interesting man in the world. He's pretty awesome, but I'm sure you guys are going to get a kick out of this. It's a great interview. You'll learn a lot about the wine business, the wine industry. And this episode is brought to you by Savor Catering. Make sure you check us out, savorcater.com. Reach out to us for any of your catering food service needs. We can handle anything from a party as small as 2 to as large as 10,000. Doesn't matter what it is, quinceañera, wedding, bar mitzvah, corporate parties, picnics, anything. Reach out to us. We can handle it. Check us out, savorcater.com. And let's get into this. Here's your host, Eric Remmela.
You're listening to Inside the Food Biz Podcast, where we bring you insightful culinary conversations with today's leading food biz professionals. And here's your host, Eric Remmela.
Welcome to Inside the Food Biz. Today, a very special guest, and Giovanni Cardullo. Giovanni Cardullo has been in the business for
maybe almost half of my life. Yeah.
Well, for a long time. For a long time, and of course, my co-host Ruben Torres.
Yes, sir. Live and direct.
Live and direct. Okay, we're ready to go. And to make a little break from how we usually start. We're going to actually start with a vine, with a wine.
The wine.
With the wine.
Which is coming from a vine.
Yeah. Which is coming from a vine. Thank you. You know, all those foreigners. Anyhow, this is a Gavi di Gavi.
Gavi del Comune di Gavi.
Wait, say that again?
Well, it's, you know, the problem in Italy is we name the wine after the location, the origin, the terroir, let's say. We have a denomination. So we don't call the wine by the grape name. Sometimes we do, but a lot of time is a denomination. So Gavi del Comune di Gavi means the denomination of a village called Gavi, which is a small village up the north, talking about the Piemonte, region northwest of Italy, and this wine is named after the village. So there is a generic Gavi, which is a little bit bigger area. Gavi del Comune di Gavi is just around, so it's the most, let's say, prestigious one.
Authentic one.
Well, the other one is authentic too, but this is just a little bit more selected. So
I know.
And is 100% Cortese grape. That's
Cortese
the name.
Grape?
Yeah, that's the name. If you want to know, and you need to know, the name of the grape is Cortese, which in English means courteous. So that's what it is, this one.
The Cortese grape.
Okay. Yeah. So to whoever who listened to our teaser, now we are going to actually really start the show, but I just wanted to try it because I know it's such a good wine, and it's still such a good wine.
Thank you.
And you know, my marketing manager Ruben Torres likes to play sometimes, and he put my picture up, you know, at the International Man of Mystery. But you know, I'm actually not that International Man of Mystery. It's really Giovanni.
The world's most interesting man. That's it.
Okay. So I'm the most interesting man. You are the man of mystery.
Okay.
I like how you just spun that. That was good. Thank you.
And by the way, I'm an open book, so I don't have any mystery.
Well, we are going to see. we're going to see how much you're going to really disclose.
Okay.
So, Giovanni, you really didn't start as, how shall I say, what you do is brand marketing. Is that the right word?
Yeah, that's probably the right word. That's the right word. Thank you. That's a nice word.
Right? And you do that only for wine and spirits.
Yeah, mainly is wine, but we do also some spirits. But mainly is wine. Yeah.
Okay, so that's what he does. What were you before that? Or, you know, I know you studied, and you studied.
I studied at the University of Agriculture in Perugia, so I have a doctor degree in agriculture at the University of Perugia.
For people which don't know where that is, but could guess.
Well, it's agronomy, it's agriculture. You have a very good one here in Davis.
Yeah, but in which country?
Oh, that's Italy, sorry.
Italy, yeah. I know.
I thought that my accent was...
yes, revealing, I know, I know.
Self-explanatory.
But I just wanted to be sure. Yeah.
That's Italy, yes. Yes, and Perugia is a lovely city in the middle of Italy. It's actually is in the region of Umbria, and is one of the few regions, if the only one, probably the only one, that doesn't have any access to the sea.
Oh, wow.
It's called also il cuore verde dell'Italia, the green heart of Italy.
All right.
And it doesn't have any access to the sea.
That's interesting.
And it has a big lake, though, Lago Trasimeno. But the university is beautiful. It's a gorgeous place, and it's a very nice city.
So you studied agriculture.
Yes.
Well, so I can see there, you know, agriculture, minerals, and so on. There might be something. But you did your studies, and suddenly you ended up in a pretty faraway country.
Well, okay, so I studied there, and then during my study I also was trying to pay my study working in a winery. That's the first time that not the first time, because when I was a kid I was even crushing grape in Sicily, my uncle. But yes, after the agronomy and work with the Traywood company around Europe, I work with an international cooperative project in Pakistan. 1988.
Okay, so now you would say, you know, in 1988 to work in Pakistan was pretty risky.
Not as like today.
Which is much more risky. That is
yes, it was the first time that it was probably one of the best time you can travel there.
It's
Benazir Bhutto was elected prime minister for the first time, and being a woman prime minister in a Muslim country, so it was quite things. But you know, it was a nice time to be there in a sense, because there was maybe less animosity. And
It was more cosmopolitan than it is now.
In a sense, yes, I would say. So, I was there for about 2 years working with this international cooperation project. I was taking care of the audiovisual communication project for communicate with the farmers how to improve their yield with the use of the fertilization. So I was practically making movie and making slides to. We had a project where it was three in each camp project, where two camp project, an agronomist from the field, one communication agronomist, which was me, and the one chief camp, which was
communication agronomist.
Yeah,
that's
extensionist. actually, the name, the way I was, my title was extensionist.
Extensionist. So. Now, because you mentioned it, so would you use industrial fertilizer? Would you use natural fertilizer?
Well, we were using urea, which, you know, it's urea. It's come from nitrogen.
Okay.
Yes. So there is a, and Pakistan is very big on nitrogen. So there was a big plant was built about at the beginning of the 80s by an Italian company, and then. They have to promote use the fertilizer,
and of course.
So they try to design a project out to explain use less, land preparation, but with better land preparation and according to the fertilizer use. So we had demonstration field where we were asking the farmers to cooperate with us. And you know, if a farmer has a 10 acre, we were asking to have 5 acre and having the crop grow with our system and compare with their yield. At the end, the farmer, if didn't lose anything, because we were at least guarantee the same yield that he has in his, but we were going quite better.
Quite so, better. So what... Go ahead, please.
Well, we're
go, you have to. We're here to drink it. So what was your next step?
Well, next step, I finished that project. And I met my lovely wife, which was American. She's American, and we decided to live together. And one step was try to live here, or try to live in Europe. And at that time, was better to live in Italy. She's a doctor, so I was hoping that it was easier for the paperwork and everything for a doctor to come to Italy and find a job than me come here and become an agronomist here, which will require a lot of paperwork. So, and so we stayed there for a couple of years. Then after 1 year, big company offered me to come to North America to become their export manager, a big Italian company. Which, and so I did that for 5 years, and then they asked me to become a freelance, and I accepted. And for 3 years, I stay as is with only this company, which is a large company, large cooperative, making Lambrusco, which is one of the most exported wine. Actually, it's number one exported wine from Italy.
Well, you have a big Lambrusco lover just sitting across you.
I love Lambrusco.
Ruben, are you Mexican?
Mexican.
Okay, so this is one of my biggest market.
Although I get accused of being Italian all the time.
So next time I will give you.
Well,
a
yeah,
nice
but
bottle.
That goes very well together. The Lambrusco. Drinking Mexican, which anyway everybody thinks is Italian, so it works.
Yeah. Well, next week I will be in Guadalajara to do something similar here with the Lambrusco. So
nice. You know, we're just talking about the market and how it's growing down in Mexico, and you know, even just right here in Baja, how they have what's that, the
Valle la Guadalupe.
Yeah,
Valle de Guadalupe.
So, what's your thoughts on the growing market in Mexico?
Well, the market still is very small. I mean, we're talking about close to 4 million cases of wine between the imported and the one are produced there. Or probably they arrive 5 million today. But so it's still, you know, half a liter per capita. So the per capita business very, very little still. But it's growing, Guadalupe is doing very well, also because, of course, being a Mexican, you're proud to drink your own wine. So, like, you know, here in California, the same thing in the United States. So, and there is not enough wine to supply the demand. So they do very well because... They don't have enough wine, so they can sell a good price. They can make good money. And now also the quality improved, I would say, to a decent standard somehow. No? And, of course, the majority is imported because they don't have enough. And Italy is the country who really export the most in Mexico via Lambrusco, let's say. And other... But, you know, the majority of... Let's say more expensive wine, or in a sense, wine that are more appealing to certain kind of consumer are imported, and they are Spanish because of the connection and the roots that Mexico has with Spain.
Yeah.
You know, you have owner of restaurant, owner of supermarket chain, owner of big company or hotel. They are Spanish, so of course, you know. Spanish wine is pretty strong on the let's say mid to high end type of wine, and then of course Chile and Argentina for price, you know, and then Italy's there.
I'm sure it's at the top.
Yeah, Yeah.
Italy.
So.
Yes.
When did you found your own business? I mean, okay, you were already a free agent.
Yeah, free agent for a few years. In 98, I started to put... my idea was to have, let's say, kind of a consulting company that was putting and working with different wine from Italy, not in competition. Well, wine in Italy is very regional, so each region produces its own wine. So I basically, through my connection and my relation I had during the years in the United States, I had friends in the industry, and we joined. We practically had an agreement to represent them in Latin America. That's what, the way I started. And for 2-3 years, done that with a couple of wineries, and actually this one was one of the first, together with Fantinelle from Friuli and Battasiolo from Piemonte. So my idea was to work with producer, with you know, good size producer, not too big, not too small, but only one per region. That way I could practically do my job in a way that I cannot, you know, I avoid to compete with myself. Wine is very regional, so you know, Tuscany produces Chianti and Piemonte produces Barbera and Barolo, and they don't compete those wine, because an Italian restaurant in Latin America will ask for some Chianti and some Lambrusco and some Barbera and some Pinot Grigio. So in 2000 I found my own company and called Joe Wine. The nickname is the Joe Wine, so Giovanni Cardullo Incorporated Joe Wine. So, and now I cover the whole Latin America, and I do job also in the United States for some wine. For this wine, for instance, we are kind of acting as agent for the producer, and we help the importer and the distributor to go through the system. So we have the people, you know, Stefano is one of the guy here, another guy, which is also my partner on the East Coast, trying to, you know, promote the wine for the producer point of view. Here the system is, you know, with the 3-tier system obliged to go through a certain rule that where, you know, an importer and distributor has big, big brand, big power. So, you know, a brand to be really be known, you need to some extra attention. Because, and that's what we're doing. We are kind of ambassador for the producer.
Yeah. I'm like, and Gavi di Gavi is good.
Gavi del Comune di Gavi is very good.
Gavi del Comune di Gavi. Well,
that's the right denomination, by the way. Like. But is an excellent aperitivo. Is a wine that you know you can drink at the beginning of your dinner, or you can have at you know 5-6 p.m. When you finish the work, and you have
Or beginning, glass. You know, of a podcast. I mean, totally works.
Right. So it's under 100% Cortese Grace. It's stainless tank fermented. This doesn't have any age in barrel or wood.
Yeah.
So it's a very pleasant wine. It's very, as you can see, has a nice. Right balance with acidity.
Yeah, it does. Not too much acidity, not too much sugar.
No, it's fresh. It's really
nice fruit. Yeah. You know, just that fruit which is not overwhelming.
Absolutely. So it's perfect to start an evening or having with your friend with ceviche and yes, some shrimp. It's very, very good.
So, in the teasers, I said a couple of things about you, and one of the things was. You've been a lot to Venezuela.
Well, not now. Venezuela
to Caracas and...
I explain you that the Latin American market for Italian wine is difficult. So you need to find the market that are more appealing to Italian wine. Venezuela was the biggest market for Italian wine in Latin America. Why? Because there is a big Italian population there. Immigrant that they've been there for many years. There was a fantastic high level of cuisine, and So there was really, it was our biggest market. So very, now the situation, political situation and natural situation doesn't allow us to really work there. At this moment, it's a little bit difficult, let's put it in that way.
A little bit difficult, but it's been already a little bit difficult for a couple of years.
Yeah, 2 or 3 years for, and so that's what's happened in and then I try to explain also to my partner in Italy, selling wine in Latin America is not selling wine in North America or in Europe. Our growth or up and down are really independent for a lot of things, you know, and political situation, economic situation, devaluation of the
currency,
an hurricane knocking on wood that go through the Caribbean, which is a good market for us, you know, can destroy a couple islands or any resort done. It is not easy. Taxation in import duty are very, very high. So
That makes
it's a large challenge. What I've been trying to do, and that's I have to say I learned in Pakistan. What? And then, you know, when I do lessoning in university and colleges, sometimes they call me for my international experience and that. When you go to another country to sell, you need to absolutely take out everything you have from your own let's say your own background and try to emerge to the new background, try to exchange with the new. First thing, learn the language. You don't go to another country without speaking the language.
Oh, by the way, so how many languages do you speak, Giovanni?
I speak decently four languages. But it, you know, I is the first things. When you go in Latin America, there are, you know, sometimes I go there, bring in some of the supplier, and I go with my distributor, I have a meeting, and the meeting is normally in English because everybody talks English. But it's, you lack, you know, Ruben, you are from Mexico, you know that. You know, if I have a meeting in Mexico with my distributor and I speak English, it's not the same thing. No. You kind of have a kind of a, raise a little barrier. No?
Yeah.
I speak English, and you need to speak English because you know I'm American or I'm from the language most spoken in the world.
Yeah.
At the same time, it's not the correct way to do business because you need to go there and ask them to buy your wine. So the first thing, you know, humility will say, okay, let's learn the language, and going out to learn the custom of the country and the sport of the country, the culture and the food.
Yeah.
For instance, Mexico, fantastic food culture. I mean, I did the presentation at the university in Puebla. They have a fantastic university of gastronomy there. Mm-hmm. And I tried almost everything you in your country is cooked, you know. And that's even great. The gusano. So, but it's the way.
So, for our non-Hispanic speakers, what's gusano?
That's in French, it would be
escargot. The gusano is the gusano de maguey. It's the worm. It's a worm.
Like in mezcal.
Yeah.
Same. They do it nice. I mean, in mezcal, I can totally have the worm. Not a problem.
But
fried.
Well, what I'm saying is, and that's why I said I learned in Pakistan, because there I learned to play badminton, so making some sport with a guy that you know you need to do business with. At that time, we were teaching them to use our system, so each of us has a counterpart where we can. So, but you need to, you know, eat with them. You need to, and that's why I said when you go to another country, you know, you just need to get to that culture. Mm-hmm. And always be positive, always with a smile, always, you know, try to embrace the fact that this is one word at the end, you know. I wish one day, I probably...
Dude, you know, that reminds me something.
Yeah.
Come on. I'm like...
I'm okay for the moment. You need some, you need them.
Well, I always need some.
So, but anyhow, that's the best way to really try to make some business, make friends, I have a lot of friends in Latin America, and because of this fact, and my Spanish is pretty good. I mean, way better than my English. My English is okay, I will say, but my Spanish is excellent. I mean, people think I'm from a Latin country, they don't think I'm Italian, so that level.
Well, but that's Latin enough to me.
Yeah, okay. But, you know, that's what I say. So that's helped me my life, the fact that I speak languages. And one thing, my barriers, I was trying to break into China, but I don't speak Chinese. And
well, you know, that's still, you know, that's when we both retire. Yeah, okay. When we both retire, we are going to explode China.
Explode China, okay.
Just for fun.
Just for fun.
Just for fun.
Eric, how many languages do you speak?
Three.
Okay. Is Chinese one of them?
Nope.
Nope.
Nope, but I have a son and a wife which are fluent in Chinese. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you feel excluded. You know, in the conversations, it sounds like Chinese, it feels like Chinese, it's well, anyhow, it's but coming back, say, to the culinary aspect,
this has been a big part of my life. Yeah. Since I was a kid.
So Peru,
I call the gastronomic capital of Latin America. It's really, really interesting. What they're doing, there are some of the best chefs, and they open years, you know, and they open other countries, really good. They know how to work with the fish and raw fish in a way that very few people can do that. Maybe the Italian.
Maybe the Italian, yeah, sure.
And the variety of corn and potatoes and kind of it's really, really nice way up there. And Mexico, too. I like Mexico, and I really like Puebla. Has incredible food there.
So say, if someone now wanted to do a gastronomic trip and would like to go to Peru, Where would you say they should go?
Well, to eat, Lima is really the best place.
Lima,
of course.
Okay. Lima,
of course, and there are tons of restaurants at very good level. One of my favorites is Rafael. It's a great chef. It's a friend of mine. He loves Gavi de Gavi, by the way. They can drink.
Well, you have to have him share the show, you know.
yes, okay. And but there are a lot of chefs there. There are, you know, they are very, very, very good restaurant there. And I do enjoy when I go there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you say they work a lot with raw fish.
Yes.
And the thing is, you know, here, of course, everybody is like raw fish, or sushi.
No, because they do put something on the raw fish. You know, they work very well with the seasoning in a way that the raw is not like the sushi.
So it's marinated.
Marinated. And the way they marinate it is really wonderful. And so tasteful. And so pleasant, and they really know how to play with that.
Well, I have to do an own plug. I'm sorry, because speaking about marinated fish and so on, and you know, the show is sponsored by Savor Catering, and Savor Catering also has a tasting room. And finally, after it's ready, the tasting room is finally ready, and
great.
September 23rd we are going to start to have our chef's tables dinners that we are going to have once a month.
So you're going to have one dinner with the chef?
Exactly, with the chef, 10 course dinner, $150 all inclusive, except of the alcohol. Okay. So you bring your own wine.
But you can bring the wine.
Yeah, you can bring the wine, but it's not included in the price, and we don't serve it.
Okay. Yeah.
So it's really up to you and whoever to bring whatever bottles you want to bring. But one of the dishes we're going to have at that first dinner is going to be actually marinated sardines.
Oh, okay. That's nice.
And I know when you see it, huge American horinated sardines. They always raise an eyebrow. It's like horinated sardines, or they're out cans, you know. Gosh, marinated sardines in Spain. Ah.
Oh, yeah. It's
incredible. Just incredible. So, well, anyway, so that was our own plug. So let's go back to you, John.
I think the wine for that day is going to be sponsored by Geo Wines. Is that what I heard? Was that a rumor? I don't know.
Well, that was a rumor. However, you can go on Giovanni's website and he will tell you where you could buy his wines in retail. Because... Yeah. You know, most of it is really, you find it in restaurants and not in retail.
Yes, I don't have a retail. There is only one retail. Can I name it?
Yeah, of course.
One retail in India Street that I'm friends with the owner. It's called Mona Lisa.
Oh, yeah.
And Dominic is a great guy, and he's carry mostly, I mean, practically Italian wine. He's carry several brands of mine, and including the one I represent in the States, which is Battasiolo. And so there you can find nice. It's a tiny place, but it's a lot of good stuff there.
Oh yeah, it's like nice to go. I mean, for if you live in San Diego and you haven't been to Mona Lisa, it's in Little Italy, just go. You're going to have fun. Yep. You don't have to buy anything, but just to capture that atmosphere of a small town Italian, you know, retail shop.
Right.
Great sausages. And the smell, just the smell. And
the prosciutto and the mortadella and pecorino.
Do you want to buy fresh pasta? Okay, it's all there.
Yeah.
Good olive oils?
Excellent olive oil. Excellent.
Nice. Yeah. No, it's worth going there. And people maybe...
Oh, wait, it changed so much. I mean, I came here in 1990 when I moved here. Well, 91 when I started to travel.
Yeah.
And then in 92, July 92, so this year is 24 years. Nice. And you were going, you know, in the store, and they were absolutely, especially here in the West Coast, no variety of, you know, pasta or olive oil. There was two or three pasta.
Yep.
And olive oil, just the major commercial brand, nothing DOP, not fancy smancy. And now you find incredible varieties. It's booming and good stuff, very good stuff. Artisan pasta.
I mean, there's a passion also that Giovanni and I share. It's good olive oil, good parmesan, and white truffle.
Yes, white truffle. This is the region where you want to go. And this gentleman, as you remember.
I know, but I think that's where we go into the mystery.
Ah, okay. Right.
Yeah, so that's the moment where we should go into mystery.
Okay. Va bene. I'll follow you.
Well, it's up to you. You know, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if... You know.
White truffle is unique.
It's unique.
And it's very unique.
And what is really funny, like with white truffle, black truffle, you know, it's so intense in flavors. Either you like it or you hate it.
Yeah, there is no middle
story. Yeah, there's like me. I love it. My father calls it Katzenpisse, which means cat pee. And he will not come a half a mile. Of a truffle. He really does. And me, it's just like...
Opposite.
Oh.
You remember we did the dinner together?
Oh, yes, we did.
And it was we brought 1 kilo truffle.
I know.
It was worth at that time, not much, about 4,500 euro a
easily,
kilo.
Easily. And we did, I think it was a 7-course dinner, actually.
It was fantastic.
It was great.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, you brought the chef.
We brought the chef, a Michelin star chef.
Actually, it was Firenze.
Fiorenzo is
Fiorenzo,
you know, brought the chef.
Who is the owner of Battasiolo?
Battasiolo, he's a great guy. I'm it's a wonderful guy. I had the pleasure to see him lately at my birthday party in Sicily. So I invited a few suppliers, and he was there with. The party.
Yeah, and Giovanni is the type of man who actually has his birthday party in Sicily. Why not? If you can,
right.
You can.
Life is short. So what do, what's his?
That's your phone.
Yeah, but I turn it off.
Okay.
Oh no, maybe it's something else. Yeah. Maybe it's your phone.
No, this is silent because I don't like to be interrupted by the phone while I'm doing something.
So was it yours?
No, it wasn't mine.
That's odd. Well, maybe it's signed, but anyway, yeah. Those little interferences, you know, we are recording live.
So.
Yeah.
And by the way, the food at the 60th birthday was amazing. We had Botarga, we had Wolf. The guy was doing incredible things. Botarga is also eggs from tuna or mullets. So in this case was the tuna eggs.
So you see, Giovanni likes to eat, he likes to drink, and he's still alive. So that means actually you can do both.
Yes, in moderation, I will say.
In moderation. Moderation.
We'll try to...
Is that a word you actually know? Okay, we won't pursue this, but there was also something I... You know, your wife, Salita, has a certain talent.
Oh, yeah. Several.
And
that's why she's my wife.
Good. Okay. And one of her talents is her bread making. I mean, your wife is a pediatrician, but I don't want to say her real talent, because I hope she has more talents than that.
Well, that's already a great talent.
It's incredible. I mean,
you try the bread.
I try the bread, and the fascinating part is that her father.
Yes, father unfortunately passed away already 12 years ago, or more, and he was a shrink. He was a psychiatrist, but he had the passion for food.
Yeah,
and he was American. From Italian background, both parents, and he developed his own yeast. His own.
Could you say that again? Because that is incredible.
Yeah. Basically, he was in love with the bread, and if you develop your own, you want to make good bread. The best way is to with the. A yeast you develop yourself.
Yeah.
And he did two or three with some of friends, and one is called Enophila, by the way, by him, and the other one, I don't remember, but we have two surviving yeast, mother yeast. So basically, the gentleman, wonderful guy, passed away, but we do make bread with his mother yeast.
Which is now how old?
We have two, and one is probably close to 50 years old, and the other one about 40.
So I have to apologize to the listeners, because I totally exaggerated, you know, earlier when I said it's 150 years old.
No,
it's only 50 years old.
50 years
old. Which I think it's a great number.
It's a great number. And you know, my wife make bread. Depending a lot if I'm in town or if I'm not. If I'm in town, she need to make almost every week, because I like to have some bread, and I like to invite friends, and of course the bread. I make two type, one type with white flour, and the other one that I like the most is with farina integrale.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you say farina integrale in English?
It's wheat?
All wheat, yeah, all wheat. And it's about 80% all wheat and 20% white, and it's fantastic. You know, she make on Sunday the dough, and she prepare in the race all night until the Monday morning, and then Monday she prepare the bread. She make 8 loaf of bread.
Yeah, and for really the hobby bread makers out there, you know what the only thing I can tell you, it really tastes like out of the bakery.
It's really good.
It's really good, especially if you put it in olive oil. It's even better.
Yes. And then she make the focaccia. You remember?
And of course the focaccia.
That's easy.
The focaccia.
That's easy.
We got a friend here, Stefano.
Oh.
So say hi.
Hi.
Hello, Stefano. Stefano.
Oh, you learned that after.
After, yeah, no, but it's funny. Yes, I learned it. You know, hang out with Giovanni. Then you learn how to say Stefano.
Stefano.
Yeah, and now, okay. Now just let's do a quick, just let's go 2 years back.
Mm-hmm.
When everything started falling apart in South America.
Yeah, maybe even more than 2 years back, 2 3 years ago.
So
yeah.
So for you, that put big strain on your business.
Yes, yes. I have to adjust something. And Brazil, Venezuela, and now Colombia and all the country because the devaluation. And Venezuela disappeared from the map of my clients, basically, which was one of my best customer. Difficult times.
So how would you say, you know, when you're a small business owner, what's the best way to navigate through those times? Because we know at one time or another, you know, everybody's hit. It's just a matter of time. I suppose that you were doing well and maybe did not anticipate that that would happen to your company, or did you actually see it coming and then you were able to maneuver?
Yeah, in a sense, yes. I'm always on top of this. We were very close in Latin America. We have now I have five resident manager in the area. So two are two enologists, expert in marketing. So I have really my hands in the market. So we know what's going on a little bit ahead of time. So the good thing is that basically I cover a big area, including United States for some of the brand,
mm-hmm.
and we cover all the Caribbean, Central America, South America. So we try to diversify and having when a country we anticipate that the following year the country is not going to bring any money or going to bring half of the money, we're trying to push other project or other market or try to reinvent the wheel in a sense. If you ask me how I survive all this year, I don't even know. But you know, I adjust myself to the situation and I create a very good team, excellent team actually, which are together with me. Some of the people are with me from more than 10 years.
Yeah.
I treat them well, so, and they are with the company helping and find the solution.
I'm sure some company would really invade when you have like your yearly sales meeting.
Yeah, that's our yearly sales meeting. It's nice. We did the couple in San Diego, one with you.
Yeah, you did.
It was very good, actually. Really enjoy. Yes, every year we do a national sales meeting, and normally it's in December. And we try to analyze what's happened through the year. We try to have 3 days of meeting, 1 day of fun, and try to create this bonding where it will help us to carry for the next year.
Well, you need that, you know. You need your employees to support,
yes,
the business, you know. Because yes, if not, what can you do?
Very little. Yeah. I think I have a good sense of recognize the people, and when I recognize a good people, I try to train, bring to a good level where they can perform and be useful for the company. At the same time, I can be useful for them. So, I think it's a win-win situation.
Well, that's good. So I just want to add one more, another apology. Sorry, Prime Minister of Panama. You're not Prime Minister of Panama. You're President of Panama.
He's President.
He is President of Panama.
Yeah.
So, what's your connection?
Well, it's a good friend of mine. He's a nice gentleman. Been doing before being a president, he was an entrepreneur and still has the company with his brother. It's a rum producing company, a big one. Can I say the name?
Yeah, of course.
Ron Auello.
Go for it.
Ron Auello, it's a very good company and a good rum. They have also very aged rum, up to Centuria, which is the best, and is over 30 years blend of 30 years old rum. So anyhow,
Panama, you know, the thing is, I'm sorry I'm interrupting you, but I never heard that Panama has a reputation for the rum.
The rum?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, so they produce rum since...
No, they do produce, but, yeah. You know, I don't remember going to a store and buying a rum from Panama.
You can try now.
I can... You same can store?
I need to check on that. So of course, it's much stronger in the East Coast.
So and are you helping to sell his
yes,
rum too?
Yes, ah, yes. Okay. Through my partner in Miami, we represent the rum in United States as agent, let's say. There is an importer and a distributor, but we also do the marketing and sell for them. So... in the East Coast, it's much stronger because there is a much more connection with the, you know...
with the rum market?
With the rum market, I would say.
So California, you would say they drink more rum? Is it because we drink more tequila?
California...
Is that why?
California drink a lot of wine. So I think there is more connection with the rum marketing because there is, you know, a lot of immigration there from Puerto Rico, which is a good Cuban, and all those countries are really strong in rum, and all those immigrants are there. So I think that Mexico is known as a rum producing country, and here there is much more Mexican roots. So yes, you drink. We do drink more tequila.
More tequila.
Yeah. That is interesting. Yeah, I'm like.
Well, I'm
but any. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to ask on the marketing side of things, and you know, I'm just thinking the whole marketing stuff here. But how do you go about marketing brands like this, and you know, distinguishing? I mean, because the public doesn't know like the private label stuff, and you know, and how you go about selling it to the restaurants, or you know, the steps that it takes after it's produced.
Yeah, well, basically, let's separate the two areas. North America is totally different. Mm-hmm. Latin America is easier in a sense. Mm-hmm. Basically, we go in a country and we look for an importer, which also is a distributor, especially in the small country. You know, so they import and they can resell. Here, you cannot do that. And it's a little bit more complicated. So I go to a big wholesaler, let's say, that is going to act as importer and also distributor. At that point, he probably is an importer of many products, or as in the case of the Panama company, was a rum producer, were importing wine, they were importing my Lambrusco, and little by little I sell some other wine there. So the first step is to bring the wine to the country, small quantity. Second step is to teach in their sales force to know about the wine, which they don't know much.
Yeah.
Originally, because it's not a product, you know, it's consumed, but it's not produced in most of the country, besides, of course, Argentina and Chile, in Latin America, which are very, very strong. But, you know, if you go to Central America or Caribbean, you don't have those. So you need to teach the sales force where what is exactly inside. And it's much more difficult than explaining wine from Chile or Argentina, where you deal with 4 or 5 variety at the most, and it's easy. You don't have tons. We have over 800 grape variety. We have several denomination. We have 75 DOCG in Italy, and I need to explain what is a DOCG. This is a DOCG, by the way. The Gavi, the Comune Gavi. There is a lot of training and education. That's why I am happy that I come from a technical background, and I was able to have people with me educated and trained and sent to Italy to the winery. It's very, very important, the education. So it's the only way. And then we accompany the distribution process on the market. So we're doing wine event together. Last week I was in Panama to a wine event. Mm. So I was there with 4 of my people, and we had 10 brands. Each of us has a couple of brands, and we were presenting the brands to the public, explaining about the wine, everything. So we do wine event, wine dinner, wine presentation, wine education seminar. And little by little, if I think that in Panama I was selling maybe 5 or 6, 7 years ago, I was selling maybe 10 or 15 cases amount of, let's say, wine of this level. Now I'm about 300 to 400 cases amount. Wow. Still, of course, Lambrusco is my bread and butter. but that's open the market for. So.
And I see the DOGC labels on here. What does that mean?
That's what I was trying to explain before. Italy is coming from the old country, so mm-hmm. we have the way we name the wine is through the history, soil, climate. Mm-hmm. And all has to do with the denomination. So since we have a long history behind, a long 1,000 years of producing wine, we've been able to, and we have a lot of grape variety, we've been able to understand better specific grape, specific area, why we can produce this wonderful grape in Piemonte and not in other places. Why the Nebbiolo from Piemonte, where you make wonderful Barolo, you try to make Nebbiolo and good Nebbiolo in other places, but there is no comparison. Mm. You have a decent Nebbiolo in Mexico, but there is no possible to have, because the terroir is totally different, the soil is different, the climate is different. So we name our system is based on the French system, on the denomination. So we have vino da tavola, table wine, IGT, Indicazione Geografica Tipica, then you have DOC, Denominazione di Origine Controllata, then you have DOCG, Denominazione di Origine Controllata Garantita. So it's complicated, you need to explain all these things. But it's also fun, because I think that the world is wonderful because it's various. You have a lot kind of things that you like, and with wine in Italy, you never get bored. I can give you a bottle of wine maker with a different grape variety for every single day of the year, and wow. I didn't finish yet. No other country can do that. So that's, I think, this beauty of Italy. I mean, it's complicated, but once you get passionate about, it's like to a world of mysteries.
Right.
Exactly.
So you really enjoy once you know that, and the taste. So that's why. So in the law, our wine are named by the location. So Gavi is a name of a village. In this case, Barbera.
Yeah. And please give
us a little bit of Barbera d'Alba. This is an interesting combination, and it's on the Italian law. Barbera is the grape variety. So in this case, on the label, I have the grape variety. Mm-hmm. But I have also the location, because there is also other Barbera. There's Barbera d'Asti. There is several other. So Barbera d'Alba is coming from the area around Alba. Alba is the famous village, town that produce the famous white truffle.
White truffle in Alba. Yeah.
So Barbera, Barbera d'Alba. So it's a fantastic red wine. Barbera is the people's wine, and it's one of the most widely known wine in Piemonte. When you go to an house in Piemonte, they offer you a glass of wine. Most probably, they will offer you a glass of Barbera. So it's. You want to open this one too?
Well, put it that way. On oh, that you can note, keep, we are going to wrap up.
So you can keep and drink yourself.
Oh, we can keep and drink together.
Okay.
whatever happens, let's go. We'll be off. Anything else you want to plug? How can people find you or Geo Wines?
Well, Geo Wine has a website. It's www.geowine.com. Geo Wine is written GIOwine.com. And we have a Facebook page, and we try to do the new world interaction. we do event here in San Diego and other places in supporting the you know, we do wine event and things like that. So you can have information on the website, on the social media.
Nice.
And where again can people buy those wines in retail?
Retail, there are not many retail we sell it, but one which is in good retail and is in India Street.
In Little Italy?
And it's Mona Lisa.
Mona Lisa.
Dominic is...
So just for the fun of it, you know, if you want to come to our tasting dinner and have some really cool wines you want to bring, go to Mona Lisa, buy your wine, and then... have your tasting September 23rd here at Savor.
It's a 10-course meal.
$150, all inclusive, except of the alcohol that you have to bring yourself.
Okay.
So,
then are you going to know the menu ahead of time?
Oh, yes. We're going to post the menu. One of the menu items is actually going to be the marinated sardines.
Sardines.
Off my head, I can tell you we are going to have shaved foie gras.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So people are like, shaved September foie gras? September 23rd.
I need to check which day the week is, September 23rd.
You know, and there's going to be like two cheese courses, two desserts, soup.
Well, I know your meal. You can do it.
No, I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And the thing is, you know, it's going to be cut off at 20. That's it. 20 people, not more. We have two family tables, you know, 10 each.
Okay. And where will be here in this location? Or
yes.
Yeah, it's going to be here at the location. And there's plenty of parking.
Yes, I notice.
Isn't that nice? You know, you go somewhere outside. Sorry. You're going to be surprised when you come all the way south, but hey, you know, it's for the fun. And I know the people which are going to come love food, love wine. And it's so nice you can bring your own bottle and not paying corkage.
That's interesting, yes.
So you can bring that good bottle of wine
that
has been, you know, waiting. Exactly. Which been sitting, you know. Mm. In the corner, and you're like, I would love to go to a restaurant, but then you have to pay that silly, I do have to say, I always found that really weird, silly corkage fee.
Yeah.
Because usually if someone brings a good bottle of wine, believe me, they're not going to eat shitty food with it.
No. And they're not going to bring a $10 bottle of wine in a restaurant.
Exactly, either. So I think it's very flattering, you know, if someone brings, you know, that bottle of Philip Rothschild, you know, 1989, or, you know, and just enjoys our 10-course meal.
Enjoy. Okay, I'm looking forward. I need to check my calendar if I'm here, and my wife will love that, so...
Yeah, I know there are people which will really appreciate it, but it's limited. Again, 20 people only, period.
there you have it.
Perfect.
Well, there you go. Thank you for stopping by and hanging out with us. And
oh, it was fun. Thank you for having me here.
You can come back and update us, and you know, we'd love to hear more and get a little more in depth. And for on that note, we are out. I'd like to thank our sponsors here at Saber Catering. Anytime you guys need anything, whether it's weddings, quinceañeras, corporate events, whatever it is, make sure you reach out. SaberCatered.com, and Chef Tony will create a menu for you, custom-made menu for your event. So reach out, let us know, and spread the word about the podcast. Everybody is inviting their friends and families to share the interviews, share the page, and share the love. We appreciate you guys. Thank you. And stay tuned for more episodes inside the Food Biz.